Welcome, listeners, to Time for an Awakening on Black Talk Radio Network, New Media for the New Millennia. This is a history and current events program from a cultural perspective. We find this program necessary because Hosea 4:6 states, "My people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge, but we as a people can turn this around." Proverbs 4:7 states, "Wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom, and with all thy getting, get an understanding." Again, welcome to the program this evening with your hosts, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. The number to reach us to join the conversation this evening is 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We're streaming live at several locations. You can go to timeforanawakening.com, which is the home page, and listen to the live stream from that location. You can go to www.blacktalkradionetwork.com. Again, that's www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening and catch the live stream there also. You can go to ourradionetwork.com. Again, that's ourradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. That's in the black belt, and listen to the live stream there. Or you can download TuneIn to any of your handheld devices. TuneIn is a free app. And in that TuneIn search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening. There you'll see the icon, and you can stream the program live, even into your car if you have the Bluetooth capabilities or the auxiliary connection. Again, it's Time for an Awakening radio program with the live stream on the TuneIn app. Drop us an email at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Again, it's timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Time for Awakening also has a fan page on Facebook. In that Facebook search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening radio program. There you always see interesting content being posted daily. And do me a favor, before you leave that page, just hit that like button. That's Time for an Awakening radio program with the fan page on Facebook, and Time for Awakening Media is there also. The homepage full of different podcasts of the programs on Time for an Awakening, and always interesting articles that you can read at later times, download, or even share with your friends. So make that one of your favorites and put that in your address bar. That's timeforanawakening.com. Timeforanawakening.com will take you straight to Time for an Awakening Media. Tonight, we have a special guest joining us, and probably a few special guests joining us. The founder of the Historic Black Towns and Settlements Alliance, Mr. Johnny Ford, will be with us this evening to talk about some of the history of our ancestors' early settlements in this country. Over 1,200 black settlements were established in this country, and some of them still exist today. So we'll talk about that history and current events when we get right back after a brief word from our sponsors.
Mr. Moderator, our distinguished guests, brothers and sisters, our friends and our enemies. Everybody is here.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Not a Wu-Tang-a. All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency and business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Overworked? Suffering with an underperforming company, headache customer, staff, or vendors? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? We turned a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one transformation created for entrepreneurs like you in various industries around the country. Not where you're used to from accounting and business consulting? Well, welcome to New Business Solutions. If you're ready to go beyond advising, coaching, and training and get implemented results, call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions apply the best comprehensive administrative, accounting, operations, human resources, management, sales, and marketing to help you actualize your vision for yourself and your company. From anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072. Spelled new as in numerous on your device right now. Book your free consultation at newbusinesssolutions.com.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening. With your host, Brother Elliot. Sundays, 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. And before we get started with our program this evening, I want to welcome in my co-host, Philadelphia activist and tour guide at the African American Museum here in Philadelphia. At 7th and Arch Street, Brother Richard is with us. Brother Richard.
Yes, sir, Brother Nolan.
How are you, sir?
I'm doing fine, today.
You know, Richard, this ought to be an interesting conversation with our guest, Mr. Johnny Ford, with the Historic Black Towns and Settlements Alliance. You know, we've talked about this and talked around it for a number of programs. And I think it's time that... We kind of get the background from some of the men that have done the research that have cataloged these towns and settlements so we can get a feel of how our people lived during that period. You know, we see the narrative to Richard, and you see it as soon as you turn on the television. You see cities out of control, and they focus in on our communities in these cities, whether you're talking about Chicago, whether you're talking about Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, New York City, Baltimore, they're showing the narrative of black folks out of control. But we know that we didn't always live like that, and something happened. So, you know, I think this will help us kind of get a historical narrative of how our people govern themselves, how they lived, the towns they established, and other questions that might need to be answered.
Definitely that towards that, you know, continuous blueprint and putting it in historical perspective. So I'm looking forward, you know, greatly looking forward to our conversation with the Mr. Ford and the gentleman that's a part of the alliance.
Let me, I think this is Mr. Ford here. Let me grab him. Mr. Ford, how are you, sir?
What do you mean you think this is Mr. Ford? Been waiting
for the last. How are you?
Good evening, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard.
Yes,
we are
sir.
Here. You said the gentleman. I also have distinguished women who are historians and artists and preservers of history who have joined with me. I have the Honorable Diane Robinson, who is the Secretary General of the Historic Black Towns and Settlements Alliance. And I have Ms. N.Y. Natheria, who is the Executive Director of the Association to Preserve the History of Eatonville, Historic Eatonville, Florida. And you may very well have some other members of the Historic Black Towns and Settlements Alliance who may join us. NY, are you on?
Now, let me grab, because we got somebody calling from D.C. and somebody calling from Florida.
Go ahead and grab them.
Okay. Is this Ms. Robinson?
No. She's here, and NY.
I am in Florida.
Okay.
There you go, NY. All right.
Okay, and we
got... introduce you to the Honorable NY Natheria, who is the Executive Director of the Preserve the Eatonville Community Association, which does a great job of preserving the history and the culture of that great town. But we're ready to roll whenever you are, both of you.
Well, you know what? And of course, I know Richard probably has a different set of questions than I would. What I would like to do is kind of start from the beginning. I would like both of you to kind of give us an overview of early black settlements. I'm talking about maybe late 1700s into the 1800s, a few after Reconstruction, and some that still exist today. Now, I noticed that Fort Moseley, according to history, is the earliest settlement in Florida from our ancestors that was started down there in Florida. Am I correct with that?
Actually, Fort Moseley is the oldest black settlement in the country because it was attached to the Spanish settlement of St. Augustine. So in terms of North America and the presence of Africans in North America, Fort Moseley does have that distinction.
Give us a little historical background on that, both of you, if you will.
Go ahead, NY. Go ahead, Your Honor.
All right. of course, Spain colonized the North American continent, actually what's now called the United States. They had that presence, and the Africans accompanied the Europeans. They were always, when the Europeans were present in North America, the Africans were a part of that.
Uh-huh.
Now, there was a certain time, you know, when the English were fighting the colonists, and there was an effort to separate or to use the black population against the colonists. It was part of the strategy that when Africans, if they came over to fight, they could get their freedom. So there was a part of that tradition within, let's say, the American colonist history. When you get to the 19th century and the Spanish in Florida or fighting the colony, the states in Georgia, and you hear about Andrew Jackson and the Indian Wars, there was a tactic by the Spanish to lure enslaved people in Georgia and South Carolina, that if they would come and fight in Florida, they could actually have their freedom. So you do see the presence with the Native Americans. I want to caution, however, that there were some Native American tribes who actually enslaved Africans, not in the same manner, but they did have African slaves. So in Florida, we talk about the Seminole Wars, mm-hmm. and Andrew Jackson. Even today, there are some Native Americans who, well, you know, they despise a $20 bill because Andrew Jackson was responsible for the Trail of Tears of moving the Seminoles and west, you know, to Oklahoma. So you have that in what we call the antebellum before the Civil War. You have that kind of presence. Now in Florida, we have Eatonville, which is located just a little bit north of Orlando.
Okay.
And Eatonville has the distinction of being known popularly as the oldest incorporated African-American municipality in the country. And that incorporation is a thing. That's an important word, because the people in Eatonville understood the need to be legally represented. Sometimes in our tours, when we have adults, we talk about the difference between being married and living together. You know, when you live together, you don't have the piece of paper. You don't have the rights. Your children that come have no rights. When you are married, it's a recognized legal contract, and that's the same way with incorporation. The people in Eatonville understood the importance to incorporate their community, and in 1887, it was incorporated, and today Eatonville remains a legally incorporated municipality.
The early settlements in Florida, and I'll stick with Florida right now, what fueled them? What were they based on? Now, I guess the Fort Mose might have been a little different, but Eatonville, what was driving the economy of Eatonville? Because I do notice that a lot of our early black settlements, it was the agriculture that was the driving force behind a lot of the towns. Was those towns any different? What was the economic situation in a lot of those early settlements?
I don't want to monopolize the conversation. They were not a monolith. They mm-hmm. were not a monolith. In other words, if you go out to Boley, Oklahoma, and if you go to Oklahoma and you hear about the Black Wall Street that was in Tulsa, and some of your listeners may know about the Tulsa riots, where the black people were, it was destroyed. Whites destroyed. It was an economic center. Even in Florida, you hear about Rosewood. Rosewood was destroyed. It was an economic, there was a vibrancy there. Eatonville was a little bit different.
Okay.
Even in Ocoee, if you were to go, Ocoee is in Orange County. Eatonville is in Orange County, Florida. The Ocoee riots, Zora Neale Hurston talks about the Ocoee riots. All the black people in Ocoee were pushed out. All right. In Rosewood, they were lynched. In Tulsa, their property was destroyed, and they were murdered. In Eatonville, it's a little bit different because the people there had bought their land, and they were living literally next to a group of white people who were not antagonistic to their community. Also, the people in Eatonville had guns, and it was slightly different. It was not agriculture, the people in Eatonville, did work out in the citrus industry. They did work on the railroads, but Eatonville was always known as a bedroom community. So its dynamic was not like in Boley or Tulsa, where there were banks, and even like Tuskegee. And I should say the Tuskegee Institute, founded by Dr. Booker T. Washington, that really was a model in terms of what happened in Eatonville in terms of education. So it's a little bit, they call it the race colonies movement that came after the Reconstruction era. And so, you know, each of these stories may be a little bit different, mm-hmm. but the idea was the same. The black people were trying to live in security and safety because in too many instances, they were not able to live securely, safely with because of the lynchings and the reign of terror, essentially between 1877 and about 1920.
Brother Elliott.
Yes.
To honor Diane Robinson, our Secretary General, give the Tuskegee perspective. She gave the Eatonville perspective. Great.
Well, Tuskegee was Booker T. Washington came at the bequest of Lewis Adams, who was the leader of the Tuskegee community, African-American man. His father was white, but he was African-American, a blacksmith, a skilled person in metals, and he was trying to teach his community as much as he could, but he was not trained to be an educator, and he and the other members of the black community were interested in finding a teacher. And what happened was the local white representatives for the state were about to seek re-election, and they came to Lewis Adams and asked him if he would support them. And he gave them an answer that they were not expecting. He told them that he would get his people to support them if they would rule in the legislature that Tuskegee could have money for a school, a normal school. That's a school that teaches teachers. And so they did it. And the community of Tuskegee rallied behind Booker T. And this was at a time when white people were not encouraging black people to vote. So they were taking a big chance to support this man, but they did because they believed in Lewis Adams. And when the white Foster, the representative, got in office, the legislature, they made sure the legislature ruled that Tuskegee got money for a teacher. And then Lewis Adams was put on a board of directors. He was the only black one. And they were set up to find a teacher. Now, the white people on the board wanted a white teacher. They just assumed that the teacher would be white. Booker T. was looking for a black teacher. But finally, he convinced them to write to Hampton and Hampton Institute in Virginia. And so Armstrong, the principal of Hampton, sent them, he said he didn't have a white teacher, but he had a very smart mulatto, and that was Booker T. And they sent Booker T. And Booker T. came to Tuskegee, and there was no building, there were no books, there was only this $2,000 a year, which hadn't even arrived yet, and they started absolutely from scratch with the help of Lewis Adams. And so as the school developed, the community was extremely important. The school wouldn't have developed without the community. And as it developed and the school began to train people in the trades, plumbers, carpenters, all the basic trades, those people who worked at the university began to live around the community. And Booker T. set up a little model community called Greenwood. It was all mapped out and everything set up how the houses would be. And that's where many of the faculty and people who worked on the campus lived. And it was, in fact, a black town. It was called Tuskegee Institute. And one reason that we got a post office, because Booker T. didn't want the students to have to come through downtown Tuskegee to deal with the white people downtown. to get their mail. And so one of the things he was able to do with the president at that time was to get postmasters for the black community. So he got a postmaster. So we have a Tuskegee Institute, got a zip code, and became, in fact, a black community, never incorporated. But I think it would have been if Booker T had lived longer. But it was a vibrant community that other black communities could use as an example on how to operate their towns. Because we had the school, you know, we had teachers, we had Tuskegee Institute. And actually, the one of the towns that was Booker T's favorite was Mount Bayou, Mississippi. Mm-hmm. And he always considered if he could start a town from scratch, it would have been like Mount Bayou. But he sent teachers to Eatonville, to Mount Bayou, to Grambling, Louisiana, and Hobson City, Prairie View, all around, all in all the black communities, the black towns that you hear, teachers from Tuskegee were sent.
And okay.
I want to, go ahead, Mr. Ford.
Yeah, so you see, I don't need to say much. I've got these historians here, both Ms. Robinson and Mrs. Nathiri. They know this history and they know it well. But my role has been to serve as a founder of organizations to preserve African-American history. I majored in history in college, so I love history. And you talked about going back to the 1700s and the 1800s. But during recent years, when we began to elect African-American mayors, that's when we really got busy and began to organize mayors' conference. First, in 1972, I called together the 8 black mayors in Alabama, and we organized the Alabama Conference of Black Mayors because we needed strength and we needed unity to be able to deal with George Wallace. And as a result of that, we were able to get things done. That grew into the Southern Conference of Black Mayors in 1974, when we went down to Grambling, Louisiana to pay tribute to B.T. Woodard, the longest serving black mayor in America at that time. And then finally, took our movement to Africa, and we organized what is called the World Conference of Mayors. Now that's our international organization where we have mayors from Africa, from the Caribbean. As a matter of fact, they've invited us to join with CARICOM to have a meeting down in Haiti next month. So we have what grew out of a small group of Southern mayors. We now have an international network. But finally, back in 2013, I was invited by the mayor of Eatonville to come down, and he wanted to show me the impact that Booker T. Washington had had on Eatonville. And I was amazed when I walked through that gate and I saw the name of Booker T. Washington on the gate. Eatonville, which is the town that freedom built. That's what they often, that's the motto. But at any rate, we talked about the concept of collaborating, a coalition, an alliance, where the historic black towns and settlements could have an organization where we could network, where we could promote and preserve our history and our culture, where we could begin to develop an historic quarter, for example. You've heard of the Geechee Quarter. You've heard mm-hmm. about the Blues Trail. You've heard about the Bartram Trail. You've heard about all these other national trails and quarters. Well, you know, back in the day, they had the Chitlin' Circuit, where the black entertainers would go from these black towns and settlements. That's where they would stay. That's where the hotels were, the barbershops and everything. But the point I'm stressing here is the Historic Black Towns and Settlements Alliance We are proud of our history and our culture. Not that we want to go back there, but we want to build on that history and our culture and our children. African-American boys and girls need to know their history and their culture. They need to know that you talked about earlier, you referenced about Black folk rioting and doing other things in the section. They need to know that African-American men and women created and organized and incorporated towns and cities. Of that 1,200, approximately 50 of those towns between 1865 and 1915, during the period of Booker T. Washington, were incorporated. And so today, we have an organization that is working very hard. We pulled together, I hosted that meeting in Tuskegee to organize it. We had the mayor of Eatonville, Florida. We had the mayor of Hobson City, Alabama, 1899, the oldest incorporated town in Alabama. We had Pound Bayou, Mississippi. They debate the year, but 1887 or 89. So there's a big debate there, but Mound Bayou. And then in 1901, Booker T. Washington sent Charles Adams to Grambling to start a school. So that's why the relationship between the Historic Black Towns and Settlements Alliance and the HBCUs, that's so important. Town and gown working together. That was the movement back then.
Well, listen, let me jump in here, Mr.
You got
Ford,
it. Because you got it.
Because this is something that my co-host loves.
Great.
And I hear that institutions were established with these towns. Richard, listen, I know you want to jump in. Take it from there, Richard.
No, I just, to have Mr. Ford continue to develop how I see the five towns that is the cornerstone, if I can may say, of this alliance. And when do you usually have your, I guess that is conference? Is that every year or they gather for the alliance?
I'm glad you mentioned that because we're planning now for our annual convention. And I'm going to let in while you're still with us. We're going to be in Eatonville and Orlando, Florida, and it's something that you all do not want to miss. And I'm sending an invitation out to everyone who's listening in today to join us for this national conference. Go ahead, NY.
All right. Each year since 1990, the Association to Preserve the Eatonville Community has sponsored the annual Zora Neale Hurston Festival of the Arts and Humanities. Hopefully your listeners will know that name because Zora Neale Hurston was a pioneering folklorist, an anthropologist, and the literary critics say that her novel, The Eyes Were Watching God, is one of the preeminent books of American 20th century literature. She was born in North Solda, Alabama, just a little bit out of Tuskegee, but her parents brought her and her siblings to Eatonville when she was very young. And Zora Neale Hurston writes about Eatonville in her work consistently. We had to fight the Orange County government to keep that government from putting a community-busting highway through our town. So we really, when we say that we have been active preservationists, it took us 20 years to get the road designed as it should have been, but we were successful. But during all of that time, we knew that we couldn't just complain about an ill-designed and ill-conceived road project. We had to really explain to people that Eatonville was a significant part of the American story, and to really celebrate Zora Neale Hurston, the town of Eatonville, and the cultural contributions which people of African ancestry have made to the United States and to world culture. So this will be our 30th anniversary. In fact, we are America's longest running arts and humanities festival, celebrating the cultural contributions of people of African ancestry in this country and throughout the diaspora. That is our distinction. And January 26th through February 3rd, as I say, we will have people coming literally from all parts of the world to really celebrate this 30th anniversary. The World Conference of Mayors will have its annual meeting in Eatonville. We will be hosting what is called the Collegium for African American Research. That's a European-based group of scholars. We will be hosting the Historic Black Towns and Settlements Alliance. You can visit ZoraFestival.org, www.ZoraFestival.org, or you can call us at 407-647-3307.
That's give them that 407, address.
Sir?
Give them that Zora address one more time.
Yes, that's www.ZoraFestival, Z-O-R-A, festival.org. We're in festival season now. People know that they can really expect the highest quality. Alice Walker will be coming back. Hopefully your listeners will recognize that name attached to Their Eyes Are Watching God. We expect distinguished scholars such as Dr. Ruth Sheffy, who founded the first Zora Neale Hurston Society on the American campus, and that's at Morgan State University. We will have people such as other scholars like Dr. Trudier Harris, who is an Alabama native, as well as Dr. Cheryl Wall, who is on faculty at Rutgers University. On Thursday, Mayor Ford talked about the connection town and gown with historic black towns and settlements and with historically black colleges and universities. We will be devoting an entire day on Thursday, January 31, looking at the role that college and university students and black students have played as change agents in this country. We will be having a group called Northwest CAP out of Seattle, Washington. That's a group of young people. They will be bringing their dance troupe on Thursday evening, also on the 31st. We have an outdoor festival of the arts and humanities that occurs on Friday, February 1 through Sunday, February 3. It really is a very, I say this humbly and respectfully, we have lots of collaborative partners. And so what that means is a very strong program. We continue to look for vendors, crafters, people who make things with their hands. We are especially looking for women crafters who sew, who do work again with their hands, because we have tens of thousands of visitors who come to festival, and many of them come because they're looking for the unique cultural items that they can't find so easily, perhaps, unless they're in a big city. If they're in New York or Philadelphia, maybe Atlanta, but so many of our visitors come from, they're not from the big, big cities, or they're looking for the vendors who craft the jewelry or who do the all of these items that are, you know, that are unique and that don't come from Target or Walmart or, you know, some store like that.
You know, thank you for sharing that. I'm glad we were able to, and hopefully, no, we will definitely want to reiterate that about the Zora Neale Hurston Festival in Eatonville. And I have to say, I picked up the book, but I haven't read it yet. One of Zora's, the manuscript that wasn't the Barcaroon.
Barcaroon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
yes, I haven't read that book. Will be there as well. The woman who had edited that, Dr. Deborah Plant, she will also be speaking at festival.
So, but you know, Mr. Ford, with the point that as I hear us talk about the settlement, the alliance, and pulling together these historical settlements, so I see, if I'm correct, there's like five that would be the core. What other settlements that you see, say even for the conference that's coming up, that you're have already created some other communication with to bring them to make a part of this alliance?
Well, it's open. It's open to the world. Booker T. Washington started a movement, historic black colleges as well as historic black towns and settlements. Many of them today may not exist, but there are those that do exist. We started with the five original towns that Booker T. Washington had a specific impact upon. For example, Tuskegee Institute, Alabama, 1881. Eatonville, Florida, 1887. Mount Bayou, 1889. Hobson City, 1899. Grambling, 1901. So I started by inviting those five mayors to be the original organizers of the World Conference of the Historic Black Towns and Settlements Alliance. So we are incorporated, we are in business. Now, there are hundreds of other settlements and communities out across America that we welcome to join with us and to be a part of the movement. North Carolina, South Carolina, Georgia, all over the South and all over the nation, as a matter of fact. So,
has anybody
Ford,
yes,
and Mayor Ford, we can mention Prairie View in Texas. We can mention Independent Heights in Texas. Of course, we can talk about Morehouse College and Spelman College, where those neighborhoods surrounding are involved. You know that you have a strong contingent out of Alabama, of which the Alabama Black Conference of Mayors, as well as in Mississippi, and in Oklahoma. So we are, in terms of the people who are actively on the call that you convene every week, we have about 45 to 50 people who are active on that call and okay. list.
So you see, we are yeah. a... So, Brother Elliot.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Brother Richard.
Yes.
There too?
Yes.
Okay. So you see, we have a movement, and it's a movement that is designed to preserve the history and culture of Black people, of our history and our city and town. And we work with our HBCUs, you know, Grambling, Prairie View, Tuskegee Institute, Lincoln, Langston, I could go. So there's a relationship. So I want you all to come in. Black Radio, you need to be there for this event. We are reaching out to Kathy Hughes and to others because a lot of people like that, Tom, Jonah, Kathy Hughes, we're from Tuskegee, and this is where we got our start with the Commodores and Lionel Richie and Tom Jordan. Radio play, and we used to, the National Black Network and the Sheridan Network, that's really what helped to make the National Conference of Black Mayors familiar. It became a familiar topic all over the country thanks to Black Radio. And we are partnering with the International Black Broadcasters Association, headed by Rob Neal. Blacks in radio. So I hope that you all will not only come and join with us, come on down. We'll recognize you and give you an award for your accomplishment in the area of Black radio. Okay?
Yeah. And as you might have heard when Elliot first opened up, he has Dr. John Henry Clark give this quote or partial of his quote where he says that history will tell us where we still must go and what we still must be. And the whole thing of Black settlements is really that model. And that's one thing that has come up in our discussion here at Time for Awakening, as far as the models of how do we, not necessarily just look in the past's sake, but how do we recreate what Black people were able to do and creating these settlements. And I understand the movement of the Alliance is to gather these existing mayors that are mayors of these settlements. So, if I may, are we looking at the Alliance to
assist? Let me just jump. We have mayors of other cities as well, because you see, in every town, there is a black settlement across the railroad track or quarters or a neighborhood, the hood. So mayors from major cities and other cities, they learn from us in terms of how to preserve the African-American history. So we're linked with other organizations that we work with. So while we have the Historic Black Towns and Settlements Alliance, we also have the World Conference of Mayors. We also have the African American Mayors Association, which represents over 700 black mayors in America. And we're also a part of Cities United, which is working to save black boys and young men from violence in the cities, the National League of Cities. And so we are a network. Much of this can be attributed to the fact that we saw the necessity to collaborate and to organize. When I called together those eight black mayors back in 1972, that was the beginning of a movement. And we organized just like Booker T. Washington did. You know, Booker T. Washington not only started, he and Lewis Adams started Tuskegee Institute, but Booker T. Washington is known because he started the National Negro Business League. And out of the National Business League grew the National Bar Association and Medical Association. Booker T. Washington also started black education in this country with the Rosenwald Schools, over 4,000 little schoolhouses across the South, which became the foundation of black education. Booker T. Washington and Dr. George Washington Carver started the experimental stations and the extension service, teaching people how to farm and grow their crops. And so Tuskegee is the citadel as far as we're concerned. That's the way I feel about Tuskegee. I was talking to our Secretary General a few moments ago, and she said, Tuskegee is not a place. It's an idea. It's an idea whose time has come. It is an awakening, okay?
And definitely understand that. And with that said, you raised about the Atlanta Conference of Black Mayors in 72. Did y'all go to the conference in Gary that was national?
I'm the one that in 1972 is the year that I was elected. That first black national convention, Dick Hatcher was elected. Both he and I worked for Bobby Kennedy in the 6-day campaign. Dick Hatcher became the mayor of Gary, Indiana, 1967. And he and Baraka from Newark and those guys who organized that conference in 1972. But it inspired me I already planned to become mayor, but it's inspired me to run for mayor in 1972. I'm a product of that national convention. And then just 3 years ago, I got together with the mayor of Newark and Dick Hatcher and Gary, and I recommended to them that we have a reunion. I think the 40th anniversary of the first National Black Convention. And it's the organization that I chair as the founding co-chair of the National Policy Alliance. We're the organization that organized the National Black Convention that was held in Gary, 2 years ago now.
And that's why, and Elliot, this is one reason why I'm glad you're making these connections between the Alliance and what it's doing with networking with the historical settlements and that historical connection, because one thing that we have in discussion here for Time for Awakening is the question about what the the conference convention of 72, the different networking that happened then. And I don't know if it'll be fair, but when we look at these settlements or where Black people have gathered, the community development that has occurred since 72, I don't know if we can say we've moved further, or are we saying that the settlements looking at preservation and now they're calling it tourists, the tourist economy is the way to go in developing Black communities in order to, one, preserve our historical reference, and two, to build an economy around that, to where, as the Zora Neale Hurston in Eatonville will be doing, bringing people from around the world to celebrate what we were able to do. Do you see that this is the transition? One, do you see that our communities, towns and settlements that are in larger cities have been growing, or are there lessons that we need to learn from Booker T. Washington and the development of the town, the initial development of those towns and cities?
Mr. Booker, this is Diane Robinson again. The whole purpose of the Black towns in the beginning was to give Black people a means of developing an economic background. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And they were able to do that with the schools that Booker T. helped provide, and with the businesses that developed, and they sent people out, into Black people out into the world to be the doctors and lawyers and future leaders of the American community, and certainly representing the Black community. And these towns now, the history of that organization of those towns can provide the economic engine for the survival of these towns. Mm-hmm. That's the thing that's important that we're trying to do. The tourism, you spoke of cultural heritage tourism. The pot of gold that our ancestors who developed these towns left for us was this history. The history that it can be an economic engine for the Black economy.
Yes.
Look at Montgomery, Alabama now. Montgomery's becoming one of the richest cities in the South, and everything that's making money off is African American history. That Legacy Museum, Rosa Parks, Martin Luther King, Dexter Avenue Church, and all that. That's Black history that's making that. Now, we want these Black towns that have all this history within them to be able to make some of that, have some of that economic benefit. And that's one of the great values of this organization, this alliance. We join together so we can work together to make the use of what our ancestors left us to drive our economic engine in this 21st century.
And I think that if we may, that it fits in, and I'm smiling because I'm a firm believer of that, because as y'all are mentioning and really reiterating, and it's important for this discussion, because in those towns in Booker T, with education or with Tuskegee, because I like what was said, that Tuskegee community did the political work in order to be able to get Mr. Lewis Adams' idea on the table. They had to do that first. So it wasn't just about economics. You had to do the politics. And out of the politics came the education. And out of the education came the development of a community to where even a post office had to be developed. This is the progression of development. But here we're talking about the same progression from going on where we can educate our next generations, create an economic base, and we have to do the politics to make that happen, which you're doing by creating this alliance. Am I correct in making that kind of synthesis?
You're on it. I hereby make you an honorary historic Black town alliance.
What I'd like to do is just to put a point on that, because what we have seen in Eatonville is if you know your story, and if you know how to market your story, that you really will see that you can develop. There's a niche within a niche within the tourism community. Cultural heritage tourism is at the elite side. We know that cultural heritage tourists spend more money. They stay longer, all right? Within that niche, you have the African-American cultural heritage tourist, and that person spends even more money. Now, we have the annual Dorian and Hurston Festival of the Arts. That's fine. But on a day-to-day basis, we entertain group tours. We entertain people who come. We have what is called the Zora Neale Hurston National Museum of Fine Arts. It's the entry point to interpreting and understanding culture and heritage within that community from, we say, the Zora Neale Hurston perspective. So we are living proof. And Eatonville is only about 2,500 people on a good day, all right? Eatonville is known as a low socioeconomic community, so that we just, you know, not to try to gloss over, but it is very wealthy in terms of culture and heritage. And people come there, they book tours, typically because we're only a little bit away from Orlando. So there are people who come for the attractions, or they come to conventions, but they also understand that they're close to Eatonville, and so they come to us, and we really are living proof that as long as you know your story and you are, this is about high touch. This is not about a social cause. You're giving people a service. They are paying for a service, and therefore you have to give them the quality of service that they expect, because they are, you know, they are spending their dollars. But in a very small place, and I would say to you that most of our people in the Black Towns and Settlements Alliance, they're in rural places. Hobson City is at the foothills of the Appalachians. Grambling, you know, you have to go into a regional airport and then get to Grambling. Mound Bayou is 2.5 hours from Memphis Airport or from Jackson Airport. So you have to drive to get to these places, but you have to travel to get to them, but their history and culture reward you. And we know from research, having visited these places, that the people welcome you, that they understand what they have. And in fact, if I can put this plug, Mayor Ford, in October of 2019, the Historic Black Towns and Settlements Alliance, this is 2019, a year away, we are hosting a clinic, cultural heritage tourism conference, to help people understand how they can be successful. I would dare say that you in Philadelphia, you know, you have that huge event that you have once a year, but there are possibilities aside from just huge events, because people are interested. All kinds of people want to know about the Black experience in America.
And I just like to reemphasize to you, and hopefully I'm not on a platform on this, but again, I'm excited, and because they're the educational value in cultural history tourism, and that's what I would like to ask as a question. In the community, say, of Eatonville, the children, the next generations, and having this kind of activity go on, are they, I'm going to use the word benefiting, by seeing this economic engine being developed around cultural tourism, but also being inculcated to the specific history of the African-American experience from that town?
I can say to you that our organization has been very active over the last 25 years. We say that Preserve Eatonville Community is P, Pride of Heritage, E, Educational Excellence, and C, Cultural Arts. And so we have had over 8,000 children come over the last 25 years plus. We have an after-school program that goes on that's academically based. We have a summer program, because ultimately, in none of these communities, I can tell you that the three people on this phone right now, I think that we're all over 65, all right? So at a certain point, we are going to transition. If we do not prepare these young children coming up academically so that they can make a good living and live in these communities and hold on to their heritage and culture, these communities will go away. They will become gentrified, or they'll become paved over in some road improvement scheme. So we in Eatonville are very, very conscious of the obligation about education. And I should say this, that parents or anyone who has control of children's lives, they come to festival. We have an outstanding K-12 program because of the partners that we have: Orange County Public Schools, Black Orlando Tech, Kitchen Table Literary Arts. We just have very vast, very fine partners, Zeta Phi Beta Sorority, who are developing curriculum-based activities for these young people. So it's just, we're very grateful for the collaborations which allow us to do this. But education is a centerpiece for us in terms of cultural heritage tourism.
Sister Nytheria, Sister Robson and Mr. Ford, question for you. Because I hear you speaking about the importance of history and culture, which I fully agree. Now, and I'm going to use an example. You see in the writings of Zora Neale Hurston, she talks about Eatonville with pride. Do you notice, now, what is your impressions when you observe our young people that come from out of state, that come to the historic black towns for festival, or they might have family there? What do you notice about them? Do you notice that they're shocked when they see a historic black town as far as the behavior, the morality, the ethics of our people there? Is it an impression that's made on these young people when they get the narrative, when they watch the television, that everywhere we live is out of control, but if they come to an historic black town, they see a different dynamic? What's the impression of the...
I can tell you that, yes.
Go ahead.
I can, because you are right. You see, the mass media, if we are not intentional about providing a more complete story, then these young people think all they can do is either pop, what is it, bust a rhyme or bust a cap, or in other words, it's an unrealistic vision, and they've not heard about the people. They will tell you themselves. They know about Dr. Martin Luther King and who else? I mean, really, right now it used to be George Washington Carver, but so many don't even know that. Okay, they know about Dr. Martin Luther King and slavery. Okay, that's it. That's what they know. And so, because that's all they hear in school. That's all they hear in school, no matter what has been going on for the last 60 years. It's Martin Luther King Jr. holiday and slavery. So you're absolutely right. When they come in and they are actually exposed to a different narrative, something they can actually see, this is talking about Eatonville, but it's the same in Tuskegee, it's the same in any place where adults are trying to show young black children a more complete and accurate story of their lives. You know, it is a difference.
Okay.
Ms. Booker,
mm-hmm.
One of the things that we're trying to do in Tuskegee, I'm an artist. I have a theater company in Tuskegee Repertory Theater. I've been a professional dancer all my life and actress. And what I have been trying to do for the past 50 years is to create plays and stories that tell our history, because theater can tell stories especially to these young people, more thoroughly than any book. And they are not being taught in schools now. When the one-room schoolhouse did better than all these fancy things now, as far as black history is concerned.
Okay.
But not only for young people, but for not only for the children, but for these middle-aged, these 30-year-olds who are their parents.
Yes.
They lack an education in their history. And we're trying to do it, at least my company is trying to do it, through theater. And I heard one of your guests this morning on this show talking about, he's from San Francisco, he was talking about three important stages of Black history. He said the Reconstruction, you know what I'm talking about, economic, and then he said the cultural development in Harlem.
Oh, you're talking about James Lance Taylor.
Right. Booker T was the economic thing, but at the end he talked about the cultural heritage in Harlem that was not fulfilled, mainly because we as a people weren't able to take care of the business side of it,
okay.
Because that's our strongest contribution to, it's one of our strongest contributions to American life. If we were able to make money off of all of our cultural contributions, we would not be in trouble.
And America wouldn't even have a culture if it didn't have the cultural contributions of Africans in America, because jazz, everything else is an American, truly American form, where most Europeans bring transplanted cultural practices to America.
And all these towns have artists of all descriptions, and we're trying to make use of their art. I mean, look at down at the B.B. King Museum down there in Mississippi. We have people who've come out of Tuskegee, you know, Dawson, the great choir director, and Commodores, Lionel Richie. And we have all these choirs, Fisk University Choir, that toured way back there during Booker T's time to make money for their HBCU. You see, we have all these cultural talents, and so that's another aspect of what was developed in these wonderful Black towns that we hope to develop.
Let me help to
tell the story. We need you to help us wake up America.
Let me grab a call here. Let's go to Newport News.
Good evening. Good evening, my people. I came in slightly late, so I didn't get all of the names, but I started listening about 10 minutes into the program. So I understand. I'm 65 years old, so I'd like to tell you people, I know by the last names that you all were the heroes that made me as a teenager become a lot more aware of what our history is. I tell often when I call into this program, the first 6 years of my education was at an all-Black school in Yorktown, Virginia, named James Weldon Johnson, and it was the actual only time I truly got an education. The rest of it was trying to make it through a system of indoctrination. I applaud everything you said, and I implore you to please give us some links, because right here in Yorktown, we have a Black Historical Society that I've been kind of reluctant to be a part of because they really don't understand the value in what you all are speaking. I don't want to take up a lot of time, but I want to tell you, thank you, thank you, thank you.
Newport News, you had African-American mayor and Hampton. I was just with your mayor of Hampton at Knoxville last week. So we're bringing Cities United to Hampton, Virginia next year.
Okay. I'd like to get you some links, sir, so I can make sure that I'm there, because Hampton University and Norfolk State is right here. Old Point Comfort, that is now Fort Monroe. All of that is here, and as a matter of fact, I'll tell you a little tidbit. You're talking about preserving what's good for us. I personally know a young man who was with the Smithsonian, but then he came down to Colonial Williamsburg to work with them on preserving the slave quarters and stuff like that that was supposed to be important. 4 or 5 years into, his name is Rex Ellison, Dr. Rex Ellison. Four or five years into having made that move from the Smithsonian to work with the Colonial Williamsburg Foundation, they end up shutting down what was the most lucrative money-wise exhibition they had, which was the contributions that slaves made to actually building Williamsburg and what we call the Colonial Parkway here. So I just make sure you give us some links, because I want to hook up one of these brothers that trying to do it the white way instead of preserving what's ours.
Okay, we got you.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah, it raises questions to the guests around, the alliance. And I hear from the World Conference and then the mayors that you're connecting with in cities How has the response been, especially since cultural tourism is a big thing? It is, as you made reference, it is a big thing as far as the next step in the economic driver for America itself. How has the Black congressional representation been in supporting the alliance? Has there been any congressional Black, even to see the Congressional Black Caucus recognize and made any kind of overtures to the development of the alliance as it creates and develops the network towards the settlements that exist?
Honorable N.Y. Netheria and I was talking about that just yesterday, how important it is for us to network with the Congressional Black Caucus and members of Congress.
So
the bottom line is that's the work that's ahead of us, getting sensitizing Congressional Black Caucus. They're already doing some things like climbing up there in South Carolina, the Geechee Trail, and NY, who else? You mentioned one in Texas, Sheila Jackson Lee.
There's appropriation that is making its way through in terms of a trail. But of course, what we are trying to do collectively, Texas, Mississippi, Louisiana, Alabama, Georgia, Florida, is to develop a cultural corridor so that people can actually see, they can travel and experience what we've been talking about on a more cohesive basis. But as you say, Mayor Ford, our next challenge is really establishing congressional appropriation on behalf of this.
You know, if I must say, and Time for Awakening is the kind of program, and Elliot has provided us the opportunity to network each other so that we can be able, and I hope that the Time for Awakening listening audience is really hearing once again the what we're talking about is the 22nd century economic revival for Africans in North America around our own historical experience. I hope that the Time for Awakening audience is listening and that you women and men are actually placing the foundation for that to happen. But it just sometimes bothers me that in this, I recognize that the bottom up approach is appropriate, but that we have people who are listening in these halls of Congress that cultural tourism as an economic driver is really where things are, and they're not reaching out compared to you have to reach in, that their leadership isn't, you know, have a scoop, and even in their own states, because I heard the experience of the, in Edenville, having to have that political tension, that local political tension about dealing with a highway. Well, oh, yes, everywhere.
But we were doing this in 1987. I mean, this is before the one man, one vote. Mm-hmm. We were supposed to be paved over. That's just the way that was supposed to be. But we were able to overcome that, but we had to be persistent. And we had to be politically savvy, and we had to have, as they say, a kind of persistence. So, and it took us 20 years. So, it's not an easy thing. But I would say that we are a voting population in Edenville. We're an activist population in Edenville, and so that that has helped. But what you're saying is absolutely the case. You have to be able, and because this is business, brother, it's not a social cause. You have to have your data. You have to be able to show your statistics. And the general population in terms of business, they know, when I say the business sector of tourism, they know the data and the statistics about cultural heritage tourism. And they also, if they dig and drill, they will know the data about the African-American cultural heritage tourism. You know, it seems to me, though, I should say this, that the one thing, because we are out in the marketplace as an organization, and what we have found, and this is really the case,
we found that sponsors don't really respect the economic power that is in the African American dollar, because the African American dollar doesn't demand respect. You know, we're going to buy no matter what. I mean, that's the attitude that they take. And so there's a difference. It's because, as a minister, as a colleague of mine said, that her minister preached one Sunday, if it's on your ASS, it's not an asset.
I hear that. But, you know, Ellie, you know, we talk about this all the time. And I think it's important, because when we look at our history, that the history that you men and women are preserving, that and brother from Virginia Beach just mentioned, the economic success of us being able to produce economic success is not something that the broader or dominant society wants to occur for whatever reason. And our particular history, I think, can demonstrate that. I don't know if you would agree with that.
Yeah, we know it's a struggle. I mean, the struggle's not over. So there's the point. Let me just wrap this up here. Been going for a while. We'll have to do this again. But the point I'm stressing here, there is work ahead of us. The Historic Black Town Development Alliance, you're going to hear from us. Okay, we are new and emerging. We are a new and emerging organizations. Just like we organized the National Conference of Black Mayors and the World Conference of Mayors, we are now at the Historic Black Towns and Settlements Alliance. And we also have an alliance with the HBCUs. So that's our focus. But culture tourism is what we are promoting. We're preserving and we're also promoting, because we want people to come to our towns and see our history and our culture, spend some money in our towns. I mean, you come to Tuskegee, we got everything. We're the home of the Tuskegee Airmen, home of the Commodores and Lionel Richie, William Dawson, Dr. George Washington Carver. You go to Edenville, you got Zora Neale Hurston. You go to Mount Bayou, Mississippi, you got the first black hospital in Mississippi. You go to Grambling, you got Eddie Robinson's museum. You go to Prairie View, they just built the largest cricket stadium in the country. So whether it's Langston, whether it's Lincoln, wherever, you know, that history, the whole idea is for us to begin to make money. Everybody's making money off of our history but us. That's the bottom line. And so we want to turn this around. And yes, we are going to actively pursue the Congressional Black Caucus, because that's what we had to do when we dealt with the Tuskegee Syphilis Study. We had to get the Congressional Black Caucus involved. To get money for the Tuskegee Airmen National Historic Site, we had to get the Congressional Black Caucus involved. So you're right. We're not going to wait on them. We're going to them, okay?
Yes, sir.
Let me throw this out before we start winding things down, and to get all three of you's opinion on it. We see now this environment that we're living in, and especially in the cities in the north, where these cities are rapidly being gentrified. And a lot of the times you have black representatives that's helping these developers come in and displace other black people. Now, we know that it's either through television, through newspapers, or through radio that a lot of word gets out. But now, with the advent of social media, because we don't have the television stations that we control, and through that Telecommunications Act of 1994, they cut the legs out of a lot of black radio on a terrestrial level. But how can the word get out that a lot of these people that are leaving these cities, or even being forced out of these cities, that they have a viable alternative to come back and build the town, the historic towns that were once established by our ancestors? Can that word, with the use of social media and maybe programs like this, the word can get out, but how can it get out on a larger scale?
We need your help, and we didn't spend an hour or so just talking here today.
Okay.
We in alliance with you, I hope. I mentioned earlier the International Black Broadcasters Association. That's Rob Neal.
Okay.
Joined with blacks in radio, urging blacks to own radio stations and that kind of thing, television stations. So we're that's one of our network organizations. So we need your help. Like I said, when I first got started back in 1972, I could count on Sam Tucker getting me on the National Black Network or the Sheridan Network or Jet Magazine or the Afro-American, the Amsterdam News. We, but now we have social media.
Mm-hmm.
I was so impressed with all those links that you gave before we got started. So you've got something here. Let me just also mention, I want to hook you up with we partnering with the African Union, which is the organization in Africa that is a voice of the African countries, and the ambassador. We're networking with them, and they have their radio station so that they can communicate to Africa. And what we're working with them because they want to communicate with Africans who are in the diaspora. And, of course, we want to communicate with Africa because we're tired of Dutch and the Chinese making all the money in Africa. We want to begin to deal directly with Africans in terms of importing and exporting and making money. The same thing in the Caribbean and Haiti and all these other places. So, sir, gentlemen, you all have just I've extended an invitation for you to join with us. This is a movement. You know what I mean?
Okay.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, this is no just talk. I mean, we don't have time for a talk, man. We gotta get things gotta get this done now.
Mayor Ford, Prairie View here.
Man. Did you hear? Go ahead, Mr. Mayor, and introduce yourself. I just mentioned your dial. Go ahead.
No, it's just a pleasure. I've been on and since the prior to the call starting, so I've heard it all and agree with literally everything that you all, as well as our radio hosts, have shared. Prairie View itself was founded in 1876 in the Texas legislature just to basically give a separate, supposedly equal, that didn't happen till the late 70s, early 80s, but education for former slaves, a separate school that was provided to educate our ancestors and what have you. And the economic component is something that I'll just be glad. We're fortunate in that we are still literally a strong, predominantly historically black town and settlement, and that has not changed and will not change anytime soon. Our institution, the second oldest in the state of Texas,
okay,
is also strongly Afrocentric, and that will not be changing anytime soon. I'm proud of both of those things. From an economic standpoint, we were founded on a former slave plantation and a lot of agriculture, like many of our communities, and I've heard that mentioned a couple of times, took place. And as Mayor Ford said, and I certainly want to thank him for all of his work and for welcoming me into this group, two years ago as a new mayor. It's been extremely helpful meeting and working with all of those affiliated with the World Conference of Mayors and the Historic Black Towns and Settlements Alliance. But my background's in business. This is my first foray into politics. And as Mayor Ford said, I started looking for what can we do to get folks here while we're some 45 miles outside of Houston. In looking at this predominantly white county, we may as well have been a world away. I didn't see it looking too much different than when I graduated some 41 years ago. And now we're about to open up later this month the largest cricket sports complex in the U.S. And I've been having fun responding to those inquiries as to why cricket, what's cricket. Well, I remember when soccer came here some 30 or so years ago, everybody asked about soccer, and now their kids and grandkids are playing soccer. Cricket is second in the world, only behind soccer. And the news and TV calls have been substantiating that. They're excited. People are talking about coming, building things along our highway so our city can benefit from that tax revenue. And we have about 700 students as of day before yesterday that moved into a 1,400-bed, all with their own separate room and bathroom, student housing complex, because we have another record enrollment of 2,500 this year. The university had to actually cut back, but with the plans that are being laid between now and next fall, we will be able to house a few thousand additional students beyond this 1,400 one, because I want those students living in, getting a Prairie View experience like I did, spending their money in the city, and all of those land improvements with these new facilities will do well for additional services to take care of the students who work, students who study, the people who work, and all of us that live in the city. So economic development is a primer. I just couldn't wait for it. We are not blessed with Tuskegee and Eatonville's history in terms of so many people wanting to come and see it, but we're working on that part of it. And yeah, I assure you the revenue is going to allow us to do, which is what a big part of that is. Then we'll be building up off of our incredible institution and city. Back to you, gentlemen.
So you see what we do now, right? The mayor just explained. Okay.
Definitely. And the same question, since you're on, and I know Mr. Ford, you know, you're saying that we have had, you know, we're going, you know, getting ready to wind down, but in Prairie View, in relationship to historical preservation, do you see that as something that has to be developed, or it's already developed? And I think you alluded to it, as far as that heritage Black town that is developing around a educational institution, or with the educational institution as a center. Do you think that historical understanding of Prairie View has to be developed, or is it robust already?
I think it has to be developed.
Okay.
Because that's why we need so much of the improvements and the revenue and the tax base, because it's not here. The institution is absolutely incredible. The city was lagging way behind, and that's why we've got so much going on now, that a few things have started. Now others, African-American and other, are looking at investing in, moving back to the city. We're building some housing developments. It's really, to me, in a sense, build it and they will come. And we started talking about it, and they started talking about coming and building it. So it's really been working well. But the history in the area, we've got an incredible group of ancestry from our 14 farm families, but even they came after the university's historical start. So it's really building on that that incredible institution we have to work with. It's very similar to, in a sense, Tuskegee, with what Booker T. Washington and the others did there, only we're going outside the normal because we don't have that visitor cultural traffic. So I'm saying let's get some money in here, then we can promote this thing. And social media, I used working with the students to help promote the new apartment complex by using the idea of having them come up with suggestions for the name. The developers bought into it, and they had several prizes and that sort of thing. So the marketing was totally free via social media, and the place had 700 applications approved, fees paid and everything, prior to us putting the first student in a building.
Okay, great. So let me just ask anyone else on from the historic town settlement? Okay, well, Mr. Mayor, Mayor Allen, David Allen is the mayor of historic Prairie View, Texas. I'm so happy you got on, Your Honor. Okay?
No, my pleasure.
NY is on as well. Diane's on. And so, sir, how are we coming on time?
Well, If you got a few more minutes to spend, we can do that. What we'll do, we'll take a brief break, and when we come back, we'll continue the conversation. Before we do that, I want to give out the website for folks that that don't have it, and they can
check. Your network is?
Yes, the Historic Black Towns and Settlements Alliance .org. You can go to hbtsa.org. That's hbtsa.org. And check out what's going on. You can contact them, see the projects that they're working on in different places and things of that nature to get involved. We don't have to sit back now and wonder what's going on and see violence out of control in some of these communities. We do have options. We've always had options, and we're learning about some of those options tonight. We'll be right back, and you can get involved in the conversation too by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832.
Thank you so much for this audience, and as I said, asking for your help. Let's partner. You do what you do through radio by helping us get the word out about the Historic Black Towns and Settlements Alliance. We're in business to promote African-American history and culture. We want to develop that historic border between a corridor, a trail, if you will, between our historic towns, so people can go from one to the other, just like they go on the Blues Trail.
You know, before we break, tell us the core towns for the historic black town. What is the population of Grambling, for Hobson City, for Tuskegee, for Eatonville, and for Mount Bayou?
All of our towns are the biggest little towns in the world. Seriously. We'll start with Eatonville, about 2,500 NY.
Okay.
Bayou, that's probably about 1,000. Very historic town. Tuskegee, we're about 10,000 population, 3,000 students. What you got in Prairie View, Your Honor?
We're at 6,100, counting about 3,000 students, though.
Hey, Hobson City, historic town, about 2,000. So mostly these are, one of the reasons why we organize, because our towns, even though they are small, they are significant and historic and important. We're not afraid of our black history and culture. Some folk are ashamed. You know, they don't use the term black anymore. But we are proud of African-American black history. And that's what we want to. We want the whole world to be exposed to it. I mean, there's, you know, we are the descendants of kings and queens and pharaohs. We are a proud and a prestigious people. Have all of this history and this culture in these towns. We want to bring the world to our cities and towns. That's why we're inviting to come to Orlando in January for our annual meeting.
And we would like to, I think we would like you to help us. We need to encourage, we have a lot of money in the black community. We have some really influential black business people. We have athletes, people in theater, entertainment. We have to encourage these people to reinvest in their history, which is these black towns. Yes. And we could do that as a people. We don't, you know, we're talking about going to government things and grants, and that's a long haul, but we have enough money to get it started within the black communities if those us who have pennies would look and think that that's something they should invest in.
Yes.
Come in.
Yes, you're absolutely right.
I think, can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, I think if we take a look, one of the things that intrigues me, for example, Prairie View, and I know the others are very similarly situated, where we have an HBCU. Prairie View's got some 60-some thousand plus alumni out there. And when you look at the roughly 100, give or take or so, HBCUs, maybe what we can talk about with this collaboration and expand it is let's start calling some of these people out. So as Ms. Johnny said, we've got a lot of folks out there, and we need to reawaken some, and some of them simply need a sense of direction. You know, a lot of people want to help, and they just don't know how, or they don't think they can do enough. And I think that's what the World Conference of Mayors, even this incredible relationship, because I must say I'm impressed with what I read after I got the newsletter and checked out some of you gentlemen's links. I really like what is on your website, and will certainly be sharing it. And maybe that's an angle that we can use. If we go after these historically Black college alumni, they are in every sector out there, and some of them are really running things. And again, a lot of them are somewhat philanthropists at different levels and wouldn't mind donating to a cause bigger than all of us. And maybe that's where the dialogue needs to go. Back to you.
And it's, if I may add, there's two sides to that, because as and Edenville is showing, it's the economic development side. It's an investment also that can be looked at, not just through the philanthropy, but through the investment that individuals can be able to participate in developing this here cultural capital that obviously is, you know, can work and benefit a lot. It can actually grow. So, and I like to give the example. I noticed here in the Philadelphia area, there's a cemetery, we call it historical cemetery, which is a cemetery of cemeteries that goes back to the 1800s. And to the point that you're raising, Mayor Allen, one of the curators, volunteers there, what she's been able to do is outreach to people, because it's a historical, there's people from the historical lodges, people who are from sororities, other famous people who, in this case, they're dealing with their headstones. And by reaching out to them, just by reaching out to them, they became aware that this needed to be, they needed, the headstones need to be reset or whatever around this person, so that people know that these people had existed. And it wasn't no, people did respond, as you're saying. People who recognize for whatever reason, until they got the message that yes, we could do that. And I've been impressed over the years to see how many people they've had celebrations organized just because someone said they outreached to them, that the founder of this sorority or the founder of this church, this historical church who is buried here, needs this site needs to be tended to. So I agree, it'll be the same thing with the professionals or career individuals or people who have generated large substantial income, just by outreaching to them, that they would respond, because that's the community that they came from.
Absolutely.
Thank you all so much. This has been wonderful. Now, as I said, we want to develop this relationship, okay?
Most definitely.
Diane's email,
and I'll be in touch with you, Mr. Ford, so you can any time you want to give us an update, give us more information, let us know about the different festivals and things going on. You'll have access to Time for an Awakening.
Okay. Well, after 2 hours, we are awake.
I want to thank y'all for being with us this evening.
All right,
and we'll talk soon.
All right. Thanks, Mr. Mayor. Thanks, NY. Thanks, Diane. All of you all.
Yeah, okay. Thanks to all of you, and certainly to our hosts. We appreciate you and look forward to the next continuing the dialogue and planning stages.
Great.
God bless.
Good evening, all.
All right.
All right. Take care.
Happy Labor Day.
We'll be right back. You can get involved in the conversation by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We'll be right back.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services if when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
Overworked? Suffering with an underperforming company, headache customer, staff, or vendors? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? We turned a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one transformation created for entrepreneurs like you in various industries around the country. Not what you're used to from accounting and business consulting? Well, welcome to New Business Solutions. If you're ready to go beyond advising, coaching, and training and get implemented results, call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions apply the best comprehensive administrative, accounting, operations, human resources, management, sales, and marketing to help you actualize your vision for yourself and your company. From anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072. Spelled new as in numerous on your device right now. Book your free consultation at newbusinesssolutions.com.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening with your host, Brother Elliot. Sundays, 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m. for podcasting or live program scheduling. Hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Free. Oh. standing here to tell you no. Free.
Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. I want to thank our guest that was with us this evening, Mr. Johnny Ford, founder of the Historic Black Towns and Settlements Alliance, Incorporated. Sister Netheria was with us, Ms. Diane Robinson, and Mr. Allen, mayor of Prairie View, Texas. Richard.
Yes.
You know, I had to play that cut from Sister Aretha. She's an ancestor now, but, you know, it's kind of prophetic words by her. Mm-hmm. She said, "Take it from me, someday we'll all be free." You know, Donny Hathaway sung that song, but she took it to another level when she sung it. So
she had the ability to do that, because I think that's what Sam Cooke said about her with the song Respect. You know, he said she, you know, he wrote it, but she took it to a place he couldn't even think. So, you know, but you know, Ellie, I was really glad that we're continuing this dialogue around, you know, the developments, looking at Black settlements, and as Mr. Ford said, the work that's being done, not just the talk, mm-hmm. the work that's being done to make those network connections, and then understanding, you know, and you've heard me say all the time, because I really believe our history and culture is the anchor of where we need to go. You know, we had Dr. Ford on, and he makes all the point all the time, it's about our mind, because our values are tied to our mindset, and it's getting rid of those white values that will make us centered. You know, where Dr. Malifaux Asante talk about Afrocentricity being centered in your own center. But here we have the historical reference of what our people were have done, maintain communities over time. And now we're probably in the developmental stage of truly anchoring by preservation the history and culture as the teaching mechanism and our economic driver. For our future. I really believe that's, you know, really where we take and change, where we used to be a commodity, and now we're taking ownership over ourselves and placing ourselves, our history and culture, when I say ourselves, in the marketplace. So before, when we were enslaved, we were the commodity placed in a white marketplace that had value. Now we can make ourselves human capital and be placed in the marketplace and create a livelihood. No, it won't be farming, but it's threefold. It'll help us in our organization around our politics. It'll help us in our education for our next generation. And it helps preserve our historical legacy and give us strategies of what we can be able to do in the future. You know, and to see these men and women networking and reaching out to, you know, to these settlements and being able to make them a part of this alliance with that in mind is really inspiring.
You know, it shows the spirit of our ancestors that are still in those areas where they were established, because the relative population of some of the areas that was mentioned,
yeah,
is not that many people.
Right.
And the sister from Eatonville said that they wanted to build a highway through that about 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
You know, our people didn't just roll over in those areas, even though I think she said Eatonville was 2,500.
Right.
So, you know, that shows the fighting spirit that's still in those areas. I think the largest one was Tuskegee, and they only had 10,000.
20 years, Brother Otis said. 20 years.
Say that again?
20 years.
Okay, 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, you know, those are the areas. If our people are leaving some of these cities for whatever reason and heading back south, then go to some of these towns. If they're starting their life over again, or leaving New York, leaving Philadelphia, leaving Chicago, or whatever, Go to some of these towns. Help build these towns up.
And if they don't go do what we should have been doing, being able to, and that's what I heard the mayor from Prairie View was saying, you know, being able to contribute. You don't have to be there to be able to contribute, whether it be by philanthropy and your, you know, your human capital skills or your dollars, or either seeing and assisting in developing. And I heard the sister from, you know, the Hobson, as far as in Florida, you know, this is, she make it clear, this is about business. So you can invest in these business, these cultural business opportunities. Same thing with Tuskegee and the sister that was talking about the arts. And people will come. People will, I mean, it's been proven that our culture draw, whether,
or look at Philadelphia,
you know, people
you told
talking
me
about appropriate, misappropriating it, you know, taking it on. But people like what we produce out of our spirit and our culture, and not as our culture, but just even in our acumen, whether it be sports or academics or even our political savvy. They may not want it, but they do, they sure enough appreciate it because they emulate it once they see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, I'm glad that we were able to showcase them, and I'm looking forward to the relationship with them to let people know what's going on in those towns when they're having a festival or when they're doing anything that the community needs to know about, because that word needs to get out about these towns.
Right.
And what they're doing, they're still here. Some of the towns was overrun and burned down and lost, like Rosewood. But some of these towns are still here and still fighting. The spirit of our ancestors is still in these areas.
And I have to say, because we never, we talk about in past history what has happened to Rosewood and other towns because they became successful. What we have to, as we look forward, we have to also be prepared to protect the development of those towns because of what they're doing. As they develop their economic infrastructure based off of this cultural appropriation, based off of this culture and preservation, you know, they will have to be protected because
you know
they
what?
Will be successful. And as Brother Otis, I mean, I think Brother Otis' example is apropos. The brother came in to wherever that was, Williamsburg or whatever. It made money, but making money does not mean anything to these folks when it comes to the money being made by us giving our expression. So if we don't protect it, then we'll be looking at the same thing that happened in the 19th and the earlier 20th century of deliberate, whether you're talking about putting highways through, or whether you talk about terrorist attack, deliberate attacks to destabilize the economic development, the economic and social development of a people who all they wanted to do, all we want to do is be able to live and prosper in peace and harmony in this environment, and look out for our children and our future.
You're absolutely right. You know, I caught what the Assistant Etheria from Eatonville said when she mentioned that the black people at that time heard what happened. They couldn't, there wasn't no television at that time, but they heard what happened in Rosewood.
Mm-hmm.
But she said that the people in Eatonville had weapons. You heard her say,
her
say that.
Yeah.
So I guess they were a little more prepared to deal with an incursion of those folks than our ancestors in Rosewood.
And it was a different. I like also what she said about being a bedroom community compared to a development, you know, where people just live. But now using culture as the economic center, this is no longer just a bedroom. It's just not where people go and live. This will be where economic development activity and political savviness is taking place. And the mayor in Prairie View, you know, he's looking at the same thing, and it's a different mix, it seems like, because it's the historically black college itself that will become that economic driver to assist in the development of the community itself. And that, you know, becomes another mechanism. Like here in Philadelphia, they rave about all these, how much economic stimulus these universities provide to the city as it moves into their 21st century plan. While a town, you know, like Prairie View, that would be the same thing, a historically black college. And, you know, and they gave outline how that's being done, can be the economic stimulus for the development of that town and community, providing jobs, careers, pathways to development. I think that's like really important to understand how these driving forces work when we're talking about settlement, black settlements, where before it might have been agriculture and transportation. Now it's our, you know, education and cultural expression, and Tuskegee being that another good historic example about education being the driving force of that town. I mean, they built the bricks to build the buildings, and some of them buildings still around in Tuskegee.
Exactly. But you know, I'm glad that Sister Diane that gave us a little overview of the Tuskegee, the early building of Tuskegee, and how Booker T. Washington came there and developed not only the educational institution, but made sure teachers were sent to some of these other areas, Mound Bayou, Eatonville, Hobson City, and Grambling. Mm-hmm. So you can see the early networking. The spirit of our people were different than what it is now, Richard. It wasn't about, well, I got mine, you know, you get yours type of thing. It was the same care one for another to see us succeed as a people. He was sending teachers out to people that didn't have, most likely some of our ancestors at that time couldn't read.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So all those teachers that was going out, they were helping our people raise to another level. It wasn't about Booker T saying, well, listen, I'm, you know, well-to-do for a man during that period that was black. I'm not helping these people. I got mine. That attitude wasn't pervasive among our people, but it's pervasive now, and it's damaging. It's damaging to our people.
It's definitely something that, you know, that we have to, I'm glad that, again, that we're having this discussion. You know, Elliot, we've been developing this, and I remember Brother Jay asking us, you know, to bring people on. So this is, you know, you reaching out actually was able to is doing that process of bringing people on to show what can be done, what we need to do, you know, what we did do. So and I think that this here process is still going to continue, because I think you have other people lined up to deal with that period, to say we're not talking about creating something out of the thin air. We're talking about perpetuating something
now,
that's already been done.
You know, I didn't ask them about the negative stuff because I already know the answer, Richard. And I'll give an example of what I'm talking about. Up here in Philly, you have Philadelphia, which is a major city, the fourth, fifth largest city in this country. It's not the fourth, the fifth. But you have neighboring areas around Philadelphia that's overwhelmingly predominantly black. Camden, Chester. And every time you look, there was some. In fact, they had a thing about Chester being one of the most violent cities in the country at one time. You remember?
Yep.
And they are predominantly black. Chester also. Violent, violent place. Now, if those places that we just featured with our guest tonight were exploding with violence, you'd know the names of Hobson City. You'd know the names of Eatonville. You'd know it. They'd splatter it all over the television. But it's evident that type of crap is not going on in those areas. And I'm not saying it's angel, everybody there is an angel, but I'm talking about the overwhelming explosion of this stuff that you see in these cities. It's obvious it's not going on there because you don't hear nothing about it. If it was, even if it was a smidgen of it, you'd see it plastered all over the news with a narrative of look at these violent black folks in a historic black town.
Yeah, that's, yes, I agree. And it, you know, it's just I don't know what to say, Elliot, when we talk about these things, because it was spoken to how we have to be clear that the media is not our friend.
You know, speaking of that, Richard, I don't know, because we ain't open forum, so for the time we have left, callers can get involved at 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. I don't know whether you saw what the media has been saying about the pastor that gave Aretha's eulogy.
Yeah.
I'm not talking about the one that was the master of ceremonies.
I'm not talking about him.
I'm talking about the one that gave you, because he also gave the eulogy to Aretha's father, C.L. Franklin, about 30, 40 years ago.
Oh, okay.
Well, he gave the eulogy.
I didn't hear the eulogy, though.
But you heard about the so-called controversial remarks.
Right, yes.
And he said he stands by them. I just want to play a clip of some of these so-called controversial remarks. And who's putting out this narrative of controversial remarks? Listen to what he says, Richard, and let's come back and talk about it. I wanted to play it. Listening audience, if they haven't heard it, let me try to get this thing up, and hopefully I got it in the right spot.
Reverend A.R. Williams in Memphis, Tennessee, was close confidant, bosom friend to Dr. Franklin. They played checkers every day. It was a time for them to kick back, unwind, relax, and talk smack one to another. And I remember Uncle Buddy, that's what we called him, talked about how it was that Reverend Franklin was disturbed about how Aretha went and got Angela Davis out of jail. And he hadn't heard that she was connected with communism. And he did not want that to be a blight on his church and a blight on his ministry. And he pumped Aretha. Why did you do that, Aretha? Why did you? And she, out of hysteria, said, Daddy, she is a black woman and had nobody to help her. And I wanted to help her. Period. So I hear a voice again, rumbling through the echo of the wind. Something must be done. Something must be done. Something must be done. No one can deny that black America, there is truly a need in our race. As I look back in retrospect, allow my mind to take a stroll back down memory's lane. There was a time when we as a race had a thriving economy. Hmm. I remember we had our own little grocery stores. We had our own little hotels. They weren't big and fancy, but they were ours. I remember we even had our own little banks. Ladies and gentlemen, as bad as the days of Jim Crow and segregation were, the one good thing out of segregation that it did for us, it forced us to each other instead of forcing us on each other. And we quickly come to realize that as a people, all we really have is one another. But when we marched, when we protested, when we got through singing, we shall overcome. Yes, we were rewarded with integration. We got what we fought for. We got what we marched for. But with the birth of integration, there also came the loss of not only the black community's economy, but there also came the loss of the black man's soul. Oh, you ain't got to say, man. I know I'm preaching to you. We lost. We lost our soul. Oh, God, Jesus, help me today. We lost our soul. Where is your soul, black man? As I look in your house, there are no fathers in the home no more. Where is your soul? 70% of our households are led by our precious, proud, fine black women. But as proud, beautiful, and fine as our black women are, one thing a black woman cannot do, a black woman cannot raise a black boy to be a man. She can't do that. She can't do that. She can't do that. Black man, where is your soul? A study was released not long ago.
Now, let me stop it there, Richard.
Mm-hmm.
Because they said that his marks were sexist, homophobic, and all this other stuff. Now, you heard what he stated in that clip. Now, let me look at what he said when he gave an example. And even though it was white sitting up in that church, Bill Clinton and others and some whites that performed, it was an overwhelming black audience. So he was talking to them when he talked about, let's stroll down memory lane, and we had this, that, and the other. But when people fought for integration, he said, we lost our soul. Now, earlier before that, he talked about what he thought soul was. Because, you know, he was talking about the Queen of Soul, and he, if you go back and listen to it, he talked about what he thought soul was. So what's the correlation between us getting closer to Europeans and losing our soul? It's a definite correlation. And not only that, losing our mind. Because then he said, you know, no fathers in the home and things of that nature. And a lot of times that scenario is true. And also that black women can't teach these young boys to be men. That's definitely true. And even back in the day, if you had a single black mother, she would always look for somebody to mentor her boys, whether it was an uncle, older cousin. You know what I'm saying, Richard?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
She didn't just try to raise them herself, like this mentality that is pervasive among some of our women, because they follow after the edicts of these white folks.
And the political system has placed in prison a lot of the black males, or created the communication system has created the culture where thug life to become is the life that you should be expressing, the behavior you should be expressing, that places you closer to the prison industrial complex.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I just thought that I'd play a segment of that because that's what they were focusing on. It was supposed to be so detrimental.
It's interesting because, we say that all the time. So as you said, the question that you asked, well, who's the one that's making this comment that is out of sorts? Because if this being true, it kind of gets down to when we're having, and what he said between the two who were just kicking it, that now our conversation between each other of what we say and making our assessment about the community isn't the appropriate assessment. We need somebody else to interject as he's just given a reflection of the conversation of what's going on in our community. But somebody else interjecting that y'all shouldn't be thinking like that. Y'all shouldn't be talking about that like that.
Mm-hmm.
Y'all shouldn't be saying that.
Exactly.
This is the way it should be interpreted. Which is further and further moving you into this. You need to be thinking like us more than thinking like that. And as you said, that was a presentation talking and starting out rightfully so. Is just interesting that they don't really bring up how Aretha, you know, went to support Angela Davis, or as was said before, how when the police raided mosque number 7 in New York, she went to the mosque to provide her support there. I mean, the you know, when we talk about the queen of soul, or that soul, Black people's soul, you know, and what she said to her father, she's a woman. And she had nobody to support her.
You know, and that, listen, that's the spirit that we were just talking about earlier, that right. Booker T and some of those other men had, and women had, during the turn of the century and before, where they had care for their brother, and even though they wasn't in the same economic strata or whatever, you know, type of caste system that was placed on our people, they didn't look at one another like that. Mm-hmm. I mean, her father said, why you get involved, according to the conversation that he said that his uncle, who was close friends with them, played checkers with him all the time, said,
mm-hmm.
he said, what are you getting involved with people like that for? You'll put a stain on my church? And this and the other. And he said that she got a little upset. And said, you know, Daddy, that's the Black woman, and she didn't have nobody to help her.
And her, a woman who were raising children from an early age by herself. Now, Aretha was in a more unique because of her, but she was a single mom, so I take it she would know what it is to be a woman engaged in something, wrongfully accused of something, but being by herself. But obviously, it's broader than that because she also supported Dr. King. So that principle that she had, which comes out of that church, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, you know, the tension we have in doing, you know, the question you raised about losing our soul, when we know what's right for us as Black people, for us, and then what we do that is wrong for us. And that's what the point we're making about integration, where we give up those Black banks, those Black towns, professionals, where we don't even support those Black institutions like HBCUs. Here in Pennsylvania, Cheney, you know, it doesn't get the alumni support it should get for the amount of students that had graduated from there. Where, you know, to his point, did they lose their soul? Hmm. And that's a school that goes back to, what, 1824, you know?
Yeah, well, they definitely lost it, because whenever you start chasing other people's values, then you have lost your soul.
Hmm.
And I see that a brother was put in the chat room that what he's been reading, that the criticism was he shouldn't have preached because he was doing a eulogy. So I don't know whether that narrative came from white folks, because if they ever been to a Black funeral and the preacher gets up there and does a eulogy, he always preaches. So evidently that must have came, that criticism definitely came from white people.
Well, if they saying that, see, because I didn't hear that about Dyson, and I did catch some of Dyson. I don't know what you call that if that wasn't supposed to be preaching. And you know, Dyson can go. So, and he tried to, you know, as they said, you know, as Cornel West would say, try to get that prophetic.
Prophetic. Yeah, he liked that. He liked that. Yeah, he likes to use that term.
Yeah. Yeah. So, it's you know, like you said, if it's a preacher, and I'm not one to know, but they're supposed to give a eulogy, but it's supposed to be able to make the connection, and he was making a connection. If you look at it from your own soul. Now, I assume they only had so much time.
Yeah, well, so, she picked everybody that was there. According to, a couple of folks that came up there, she asked everybody that spoke that she, you know, wanted them to do and be there.
She set the stage.
And I noticed that Minister Farrakhan didn't speak. Now, I don't know whose idea that was, because it obviously wasn't Aretha's idea, because she invited him.
Mm-hmm.
But, mm-hmm. Some of our people is still... I don't know. What can you say?
That gets into that discussion about why didn't show up?
Who is that?
What's his name? The president?
Oh, Obama. Well, he sent a letter.
Yeah.
Through Sharpie. He didn't come. His wife. I mean, either him or his wife couldn't be there, and Aretha broke her neck to be at that inauguration so she could sing for him. And made no bones about it that she wanted to sing for him. But, for whatever reason, he had to go and see John McCain off that he couldn't be there for her. But that's what it is. You know, it is what it is. People's actions say what they believe in their heart.
And their supporters, one side or another, as far as giving justification, I'm not trying. In my head and in my heart, I feel I have a tone, but I'm trying to be biased. You know, I'm trying to be centered, not one way, not biased, but centered, one way, not one way or another. But as you said, the actions brings up speculation, and maybe he'll speak to it. Maybe he don't have to speak to it. But you know, that leads us to speak to it in our own way of why it couldn't be done.
We're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, Richard, I'm going to play a collage that I put together again with some snippets of speeches. And the last snippet, I want your opinion on it when we come back from the break.
Uh-oh. Mm-hmm.
I want your opinion on it. We're going to take a brief break. We're in open forum for the rest of the program. You can join the conversation by dialing 215-490-9832, 215-490-9832. We'll be right back.
Listening to Time for an Awakening, with host Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 21- 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
I transformed a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one of the tangible transformations I've created for entrepreneurs in various industries around the country. If this isn't what you think of when you think of accounting and business consulting, then get ready to take down this invaluable information. Are you an entrepreneur suffering with a stagnating company? Have headache customers, staff, or vendors? Are you rebounding from a loss and need help achieving your unrealized potential? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? Hi, my name is Nataki Kanban. If you're ready to go beyond advising and coaching and get results, then call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions recommend and implement the best comprehensive sales, administrative, human resources, accounting, and operations to help you grow into your vision for yourself and your company. Again, from anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072 or pull us up on your device right now and book your free consultation at www.newbusinesssolutions.com. And just mention you heard this special announcement on Time for an Awakening.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
For 12 years, I and others like me have held out radiant promises of progress. I had preached to them about my dream. I had lectured to them about the not too distant day when they would have freedom all here now. I had urged them to have faith in America and in white society. Their hopes had soared. They were now booing me because they felt that we were unable to deliver on our promises. They were booing because we had urged them to have faith in people who had too often proved to be unfaithful. They were now hostile because they were watching the dream that they had so readily accepted turn into a frustrating nightmare. And so the collision course is set.
The desegregation decisions and other type of legislation and Supreme Court decisions depends upon changing the white man's mind. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad teaches us that our own mind has to be changed. We have to change our mind about ourselves.
In what way?
Well, so he teaches us the importance of moral reformation, a knowledge of self. And for instance, the average so-called Negro, he doesn't think that he can go into business and provide jobs for himself. And because of this, he thinks that he can only get a job from the white man, or he can only get clothes from the white man, or he can only get food from the white man. And we who follow the Honorable Elijah Muhammad are taught that the same thing that the white man has done for himself and his kind, if our people could be wrecked, if we could be cured of our slave mentality that was indoctrinated into us during slavery, we would realize that just as the white man can do these things for himself and his kind, we can get together in unity and harmony and do the same thing for ourselves and our kind.
I'm not wondering at all about them. I'm concerned with the suffering and the pain of the masses of black people. No one wants to pay reparations. The Jews received over $100 billion in reparations and gets $4 billion annually. A Holocaust museum was set up for them on this soil for over $200 million, and they get $21 million annually just for operating expenses. But the Catholic Church, the Pope, the Jews, the Arabs, white people in general, no one wants to pay reparations to these, the sons and daughters of Africa. So I speak to them. I don't speak to the family of those two Jews. There are too many of us for me to speak to them.
And one of the reasons why I'm always happy to come to this organization, because you're the only one, you're the only black organization, again, that understands to put race first. Race first. Race first. And I've had some white folks to tell me that I was a flaming militant, a radical, or whatever all of these names were that they called me. And I said that I am very pleased that you called me a nationalist, because you could have said that I was a member of the NAACP of the Urban League. So I said, I'm very pleased of the names that you have given. But I said that because we put race first, something is wrong with us. But everybody else puts their own first, because God bless the child who has his own. And so I think that race first is very important. And though we meet in a different venue, we're not at the Slave Theater, we're not at the church, we're now at the Masonic Temple, it really does not matter where we are physically. It matters where we are in our minds. And wherever we meet, as long as we know that we're Africans and as long as we know that we're black people living here in America, we know exactly who we are. You notice you can put an Uncle Tom in any venue in the White House. You can even put him in his. He's going to still be a Tom. You can put him anywhere you want. Well, it's the same thing with us who are strong people. Wherever we are, we're going to be the people that we need to be.
Encourage, let me just say this before our time winds up. And that is, I want the people in the audience to go back and look at the video clip from Roots. It's entitled something like Breaking Kunta Kinte. That scene opens with Lorne Greene sitting in, who's the plantation master, sitting in his office, and then Fiddler comes in and says, we don't want to be too hard on the runaway. Kunta Kinte has just run away and been caught. And so the time comes for him to get his lashing. And if you look at this scene, it's about 9 minutes, and study the scene. Study the role of everybody or bodies that are in this particular clip. And you will find that there is an equivalent role in the political life of our country today, whether it's on the national level or on the local level. There's the black man who actually does the whipping of Kunta Kinte. There's the white man who does the whipping. There's the black man who intervenes with the boss man and tries to save the life of Kunta Kinte. There's Kunta himself, who eventually is forced to admit that his name is Toby. And there's dozens of bystanders, black, who are watching. This is a very powerful scene. And it's an analogy of exactly what is happening in our community today. Let's give those characters names in our community and call them what they are, and then take care of business about that.
Welcome back to Time for an Awakening, and we're in open forum this evening. Well, after our guests left, for the few minutes we have left, we'll be in open forum. So you can give us a call if you want to participate in the conversation by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. Richard, that last clip was Cynthia McKinney. And I understand that she said that on another program, NPR or something like that, but she said it first that I heard when she was on our program about 4 or 5 years ago, and that clip was from my program.
Well, I tell you,
analysis. Go ahead. I
just heard it, and I like you said, like you was about to say, and I apologize because I couldn't have put a better metaphor for the political arrangement within the black and the, you know. As I see it, anyway, I guess I'm saying I agree with her that the way she made that facsimile of the arrangement, the political arrangement, the power arrangement. It wasn't just political, it's a power arrangement. But the point that you have this black man, and in the clip that I heard, she said, and he got whipped until he changed his name and when it was asked, what's your name? And it's, my name is Toby. And I take it that what we talk about when we talk about taking on white values, you know, we get whipped when we do any expression of our black self. Like, there is no universal value for us as Africans, as American Africans. There's no universal values that others can learn from, except for culture, right? Something, you know, and only if we're the commodity, not when we control it. Our singing, dancing, our sports playing, you know, our acumens. Because even recently, using that example, what's her name? The tennis player? All she did was put on a black suit, and they told her that she can't even wear. You know, saying that, you know, and they called it a Black Panther suit. She put it on because of her particular condition. But for that form, the French ruling. But I just deviated to say that, you know, and then to have all these people, and I think the thing that bothered me the most that I felt that, what she, in this clip I heard, she called the mushy middle, the ones who are just watching.
Mm-hmm.
We're just watching. We're watching the whipping. We're watching, and we have the numbers, but we're just watching. I thought it was powerful. It makes me want to go back and look at it again.
And the thing I like about what she said at the end was these people have to be called out for this.
That's right.
All of the players, even right. The ones who's watching, you know, we talk about on Time for Awakening, get involved out here. We got to get involved. Right. We can't sit back like we're watching a tennis match. You know, a tennis match, your head goes from one side to the other. You know, we can't do that. It's similar to what she just stated.
Right. Right.
We got to get involved. Yeah. Some people get involved in the other way, like she mentioned. In that clip, but we can't afford to sit back.
Yes.
The question.
Yes.
Gentlemen, Mayor Allen in Prairie View. I couldn't let y'all go. I'm just glad that y'all came back on. I've been listening ever since.
Okay.
Thank you.
How connected is your show to, say, some of the HBCUs? We've got all these 18 to 20-ish year old students who need to be hearing. I mean, I remember the Roots piece. I remember how I felt when he finally broke. And it just kind of hurt to hear her reiterate it in a sense. But that's real, and we need to hear that. We need to be reminded until we get it right. But I'm just thinking, how can I connect you all to our Student Government Association at Prairie View They've got this one thing, too, while I'm asking that question. They call it SPIT knowledge. I forgot what the acronym stands for. But basically, they bring in brothers and sisters, you know, to speak on issues. And they brought in a lot of different folks and a lot of, you know, with a variety of backgrounds. And I think your show and you gentlemen and what you're reminding, pointing out, the research you bring out, our students, not to mention our adults, don't get me wrong. That's why I haven't been able to get off the doggone phone and get to some things I need to do. Thank God tomorrow's a holiday. But the youth of today, because they missed so much of what we went through over the years. I mean, the whole civil rights movement, that's in the history book to them, and the book is not in their classroom. Mm-hmm. So how can we make that connection, maybe using the HBTSA and World Conference of Mayors? But we've got with social media, once it gets to one set, we can even promote them to get it to their friends at majority institutions or who didn't even go to school at all. What's your thought?
As many venues as the word can get out, in fact, I would like, because we've been trying to do some things up here with certain folks that we know that is connected with Lincoln and other schools up here. But I would like, I'll get your number off the air, or either I'll get it through Mr. Ford, because the young people there at Prairie View, I'm quite sure they have, programs where they dialogue about current events. Am I right?
Well, they've got a student internet-driven radio show.
I'd like
so to. That may be the venue that you're referring to.
Well, I'd like to network with them, because what they're doing, I'd like to showcase it on Time for an Awakening.
Okay.
And that would be a way we can do some type of mutual interaction, because I want the young people to have a dialogue and a voice on what we do. We do have some programs where that's focused for younger people, and it's a show on that comes on Wednesday nights. That is a young lady up here, and she's the communications director for Cheney University up here, which is a HBCU up here in Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm. I'm familiar with Cheney in Lincoln.
Yeah, she does a program.
I used to do black college tours for 16 years when I was in L.A. because our students were not. Let's just say the Cal State and UC system schools were not accommodating to people of color, and they didn't have any options, so I couldn't get anyone to come, for example, to Prairie View. They were doing some of the, you know, Morehouse, Spelman, even Howard and FAMU things, but I'm like, y'all missing the boat here. So I just started and ran a black college tour myself for 16 years and, you know, bringing 100 to 200 from Houston, finishing up at Howard and swinging through, you know, a lot of the circuit along the way, but the need, the modern day need for our youth to hear brothers like you and this show, I can't even put it to words. You know, I deal with a lot of the students here. I'm the number one recruiter of students in Prairie View's history. And after they gave me that award some years ago, to my knowledge, they haven't given it to anyone else. So I'm still laying claim to it. but the students I deal with, you know, again, just incredible youth. But a lot of the parents didn't pass on, even if it was the little bit that they knew, and many of them didn't have it because it was not disseminated in our schools.
Right.
So we have to, and again, I listened to, because I wanted to get a full flavor, and I just like the references, the background, the things that you all are talking about is so relevant, and at the same time, unlike what they say the pastor said at Sister Franklin's funeral, even that wasn't controversial. I mean, that's sickening, but again, whenever we choose to be pro us, they couch it as anti them. Mm-hmm. And when I ran the NAACP in Los Angeles, I made it quite clear. I'm not anti-white. I'm pro-black. You yes. do your thing. I'm doing mine. You know, and we ain't got to go into that. Even with some of the folks I deal with here in Prairie View, I keep doing what I know is good and right for those who live, work, and study here. And beyond that, I really don't care. I didn't come here to be mayor, and I didn't come to die in office. But while I'm here, we're going to get some stuff done. And we're changing this because I just had a real bad feel of being set up for gentrification. Mm. And I was not going to sit back and wait for some good folks to come in here on a white horse and quote unquote save us. We're doing that ourselves now. And whatever I need to do to continue to make that happen, that's what's going to happen. You know, we're cleaning up the city. The police force is almost doubled. And we are just really getting some things in here to get some revenue and services and make this what it could and should be. Because just because it's the HBCU town doesn't mean it needs to look like what some folks think our areas and surroundings do. And now they're coming, looking, talking about us instead of really talking about us. Now they're talking about what we got going on.
Okay.
That's great. And I'm glad to hear that you see that this time for awakening, and I'm just a co-host, so Brother Elliot is in the mechanism that he put out could be a vehicle to really touch, because that's what we need to do when we're talking about looking forward, touch the minds and spirit, soul of that next generation. So, and internet right now is internet radio can be brought in compared to, say, what terrestrial had to, because we can be anywhere and connect, interconnect. When you raise the question about HBCUs, it seems to me you have an internet connection. It could be broadcast in, and as Elliot's saying, have an internet dialogue without even having to leave.
Yes. Well, when I went to your website and I saw Gil Scott-Heron, and you guys had my my boy's the last poet on there. I'm sorry. I just had to stay on the phone. I had to stay on the phone. I said, No. Yeah, I know. I'm telling my age. I'm 62. But, oh, man. The last poet, the revolution. Oh, my God.
And the beautiful thing for me is that being, a mayor and having that understanding, because that's the, in that, what Sister McKinney brought out, the person who was doing the whipping, sometimes we look at that as the political elite doing the whipping to really try to get us to conform to what we say is white values, compared to being able to recognize that even in spite of, I'm not doing that.
Well, I think if this county, when I came in 73, was not very accommodating to us. And we had to go through other areas to get to the city of Prairie View and our university. And in coming back over 40 years later, things have changed, but some things haven't changed, if you get my drift. Mm-hmm. And I had to take on, and I did so willingly. Thank God they had no idea of the civil rights law firm I ran in Los Angeles across from Johnny Cochran's office, or my work in running the NAACP. And I used it to my advantage, because when they said buzzwords, the hair went up on my neck, but I kept my composure, but I dealt with them. And now some of them don't speak to me, and I am perfectly okay with that, because my responsibilities within the 7.2 square miles of the city of Prairie View, and the folks outside of that, what you do is yours, but don't come over here acting like you expect some folks to tap dance and shuffle, because I've never done either one. And it's been different based on, my 9 predecessors and what have you, and what these folks were expecting. And as recently as last week, I was asked to come to the county's Realtor Association to share with and answer questions, give them an update on all of our economic development activity in the city of Prairie View. Mm. And they said they've never had that many people in the room. And I took it as a compliment because we're moving Prairie View with or without you. And fortunately, we don't need that. So we're just making some things happen. And I'm non-apologetic for any of the progress. And we're just doing the kind of things we can do to make it look and be as that incredible institution deserves, a city that is reflective of the work that it's doing up there, just like UT in Austin or A&M in College Station. We're using and working together much more now on helping the city be symbolic of what the university has done and is continuing to do for these incredible students that we have down here.
Well, listen, we'll talk, Mary Allen. I'll get a hold of Mr. Ford. I'll get your number off the air, and we can work something out. I'd love to have some of the young people from Prairie View and I'm on Time for Awakening.
And what does it take for? And I'll find out, because as I understand, the spit knowledge thing is something where they, you know, fly in those of you who they bring in on that. And I know at least one of the facilitators of that program, so I'll get with her and find out the particulars. But is it possible, because of the whole technology piece, for you guys to do a live broadcast here with these students or anything like that, just in going to talk to her? I just want to give her some ideas of what we might be looking at.
A live, you're talking about us physically coming there?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah, if they're going to fly you here, yeah, I want you here. It'd be a pleasure to meet you guys.
We'll get it. Let's talk. We'll talk.
Okay.
We'll talk. We'll get
Sounds
it together.
Good. And again, I appreciate you guys. I love what you're doing. Keep doing it. And anything I can do on this end, because I know our students here, and don't let me forget, but to be able to have whatever it is you email out that I can share, especially through text, maybe the website link or something.
Okay.
And I'll get it to the students that I'm in touch with and encourage them to listen to. And maybe, like, say, with this one, even with what y'all were saying with Tuskegee and Eatonville, all that's a lot of historical stuff that these students need. So even the link to this show may be a very good one to start, at least on the local Prairie View student level. And I'll just sell them on, you know, hey, we're talking about Prairie View, the University of the City on this. Listen to this and pass, you know, post it to all these things that they do. And we can start there and just start to promote the good work and conversation you guys had this evening.
I'll send you the link of the program tonight. It'll be up on the website. And also I'll get your email address from Mr. Ford, and we'll set things up. We'll move forward.
Okay. You got it. Appreciate you guys. But you have a good evening.
Give me a little time. Check it out tomorrow morning, and this program will be up on the website so the students can pull it down.
Okay. That sounds like a plan.
I'll talk to you soon.
All right, thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you guys for doing what you do, because when we can pull all this stuff together, my position is we got a great network. The net's just not connected. So we can do what we need to do, and it'd be a pleasure on this end. Have a good evening. God bless, guys.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Richard, connecting the dots. You know, I do want to mention too, Mr. Moore, Reginald Moore, that was on 2 weeks ago about the atrocity down in Sugar Land, Texas. Mm-hmm. With the bodies of our ancestors being found in a mass grave. I told him about Antoinette Harrell, who did the documentaries on genealogy and, helped Reverend Gaddy with the book about the atrocity that went on down in the Dozier School for Boys. Well, they hooked up, Richard. She's going to Sugar Land next week. She's going to Sugar Land next week. She called me today. She's going there next week and to meet with some of the other genealogists there and with Mr. Moore. Then he turned around and called me to thank me for for putting him in touch with her and introducing him. And he said he had some information to share with her. She mentioned to me that she has a lot of documentation she wanted to share with him. So connecting the dots. This is what we're trying to do here, Richard. This is what the program is about.
Right.
I love it. I love it.
I'm excited about it. And I have to say to the listening audience, once again, Dr. McKinney was saying, in the sense of using that roots, that as you had just got finished saying, we can't no longer, the multitudes of us, not the ones who is being whipped, not the one that's going to the slave master trying to protect the one that's being whipped, and not the one that's doing the whipping, but those of us who are standing that mushy middle, who is standing on the sidelines watching this, that is not a natural, normal position to be for us. Not in this time. It wasn't in the time, any time before in our particular history. We had to participate. This is not a spectator show. Our life is not a spectator sport. And it is our life, down to the DNA of our existence, that's really on the line. So I just, to the Time for Awakening audience, to see and look in their area of how, as you say, Elliot, they can do that networking, because we can do something to connect the dots. Some distance along, some distance or short, but we have to create the spark to make that connection, it seems to me.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. Listen, before we leave tonight, I just want to let everybody know about the lineup for the rest of the week. Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, and Monday morning starting at 11 o'clock, Brother Oshi, African Perspectives, from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Later on that evening, Brother Jihad Ahmed with Acres of Diamonds from 6 to 8 on Time for Awakening. After Brother Jihad, Sister Nataki, and Brother Talib with Let's Buy Black 365 Connect. I think they'll be starting their second season soon. I got to get in touch with Sister Nataki because she spent a month in Ghana. I know she's back. I've been meaning to hook up with her, but we'll get things straight. I got to touch base with Sister Nataki. On Tuesday, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10 on Time for Awakening. On Wednesday, Revive is back with Sister POC from 8 to 10 on Wednesday evening. On Friday, Time for Awakening is back at 8, from 8 to 10 on Time for an Awakening. I want to thank everybody for listening to the program this evening. Lively discussion, as always, and we'll be back on Friday, Lord willing, to continue on this path towards an awakening. Peace.
Peace.
If you're driving through the country on a lazy afternoon, or you're watching your children playing after school, they seem to be so unaware. I know the things that they'll soon have to take care of. We've got to do something, yeah, to save the children. Soon it will be their turns to try and save the world. Right now they seem to play such a small part of.
said he wants to be a fireman. And little Mary, she said she got to teach school.